It is September 6th, 2017. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch.
Hello.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please call or text at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute or to be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Wow, enough of the business. Okay, so we're going to start out with a few things. I do have a guest here today with who we will be getting to. He's going to be very patient with me while I work my way through all this. Ron's Rant of the Week. Okay, here it is. I'm going to say it. NBC Sports Network. Why? Why NBC Sports Network? Why would I be that way? Because they are broadcasting live and also recorded the Vuelta a España, except you had to pay an extra charge to see it. You don't have to pay an extra charge to see football. You don't have to pay an extra charge to see baseball. You don't have to pay extra charges for all these, okay, I'll say it, American sports, but for one of the most watched athletic events in the world, being bicycle racing, you have to pay for it. So anyway, that's my rant. I'm not real happy about it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a race overview here today just to fill you in on the Vuelta a España. We are now on stage 17 today. Vicious race today. There is a, they call it a, I guess it's a wall of sorts, and it's called Los Muchachos Wall. Help me here, Fran, with my Spanish.
Los Muchachos Wall.
It has 28% grades on it.
Ew.
If you're wondering what that's like, it hurts to think about it. That's how steep that is. That's steeper than stairs, by the way, in case you're wondering. Stairs are roughly 23% or so.
So Robinson Hill is a cakewalk compared to that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this has got some good little punchy stuff on it. It's long enough. It's long enough. It's kind of nasty. So anyway, it seems to me that it's only 7.2 kilometers for this particular wall, but it has ramps at 28% that can just really kind of take you for a bit of a ride. So there's going to be some real leg breakers out there today. It's really cool. And now on to the boring stuff. And the boring stuff is I'm all froomed out, man. Christopher Froome is winning the race. Yesterday, he won the time trial, and he won the time trial by over 30 seconds, or right around 30 seconds.
That's because he's a rider. Very pious Jew.
Well, he's a...
His name is Froome. His name is Froome.
It's true. His name is Froome. But I'm just getting bored. Anyway, what can you do? That's what we got. It's the Chris Froome show. He's winning everything in sight.
He's good at what he does, and you're complaining. And you're dissing a guy for being good at what he does.
I'm just bored. I'm getting Lance Armstronged here. I'm starting to feel a little like, oh, again? You know, I don't know. You know, whatever. That's what it is. So anyway, that's what's going on. In the Vuelta, there are still more days left. It's Chris Froome by a minute and 58 seconds over Vincenzo Nibali. It's crazy, crazy stuff. There's no one even close to him. So it looks like it's going to be yet another Chris Froome show. And that means he has won two Grand Tours in a row.
Who can do that?
Well, it's pretty superhuman, that's for sure. He's got a heck of a team behind him. So enough of the Vuelta. We'll move on. We want to move on to other things, like positive things. So as we always have on the show now, we have a piece called On a Positive Side. And on a positive side, I'm going to say people that are still building bicycles right here in the United States. And this makes me go to a point where I can segue right to my guest today, who is Eric Weiss. Eric, thank you for coming to the show.
Well, Ron, thanks so much for having me back.
And Eric is the founder and the manager, I guess, of do you what do you how do, tell me what tell me more about yourself.
Well, yeah, I am the founder, that's true, of the New England Builders Ball. This is our region's, New England's, only annual bike show. And its focus is, as you said, domestically built, mostly custom built bicycles, and with exhibitors from all over the northeastern U.S. This is show number 7 that's coming up.
Nice.
And on September 23rd in Boston. And I'm really excited that for the first time, out of the since the founding of the show, it will be in the city of Boston.
Right. So this is a big change here because it has been kind of bouncing around different places. The Builder's Ball. Why do you call it the Builder's Ball?
Well, builders, that should be the obvious part of it.
Right.
These are people who are building bicycle frames one at a time. And as I said, mostly custom built, kind of like going to a tailor to have a suit made, except you know, when everything's done, you've got this amazing bicycle frame built for you out of steel or titanium or aluminum or wood or bamboo. The reason we call it the Builder's Ball rather than, you know, the Boston Bicycle Expo or something like that is
right.
Because of the mood of the show. So when you drill down, it is, at its essence, a trade show.
Okay.
It's a place where people can come to look at some of the world's most beautiful bicycles that are being built in the northeastern U.S. And talk to these fabricators. But while you're there, it doesn't feel like you're at a trade show.
It's not like being at a trade show. I've been going to trade shows my whole life, and I can tell you right now that when you go to your first one, you're really excited. When you go to your second one, you're still pretty excited. When you go to your third one, you're starting to go, And by the time you've gone to your 42nd one, you kind of go, oh, I got to go to the trade show. So it's different. This is a lot more exciting to me.
Yeah. So trade show, when a person thinks of a trade show, they're probably thinking about a cavernous civic center, convention center type environment. With fluorescent lighting and the hum of the HVAC overhead. These are the sorts of things that people associate with a trade show.
Yeah.
So the intent, and it's not just bad for people coming to attend. The people exhibiting don't like it all that much either.
Oh, no. No,
so
we don't.
the show that the Builder's Ball has become is very much different. So as I said, when you drill down, it is a trade show. But when you're there, it feels like you're at a gallery opening or a gala. It's a low-stress environment. It's always in a distinctive sort of space. And it's low stress for the exhibitors, and it's just a fun place to be for attendees.
And by the way, if you're like us, where you're a bike geek, I will admit it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love bikes. I mean, I've always loved bikes. Bikes just are right. There's nothing else to say. Bikes are right. So if you're that one of those people and you appreciate the beauty of the construction of the bikes that these people are putting out there, it's fascinating. It really is.
Yeah. And one of the really nice things about putting on a show here in New England is we have this wonderful history of bicycle building in this region as well. North America's bicycle industry began in New England,
right?
In Connecticut and Boston. And there was a time where pretty much every city, big and small, had at least one shop building bikes. Now, of course, those early bikes were anything but what we experience today. And they were essentially made from plumbing or in some cases, old rifle barrels.
Right. Because the machining was already there for it.
That's right. After the Civil War, there was an awful lot of that rifle tubing sitting around from the rifle factories with nothing much to do with it.
The Colt building in Hartford probably had a fair amount of that.
And it's no mistake that one of our region's most important bike builders, Ivor Johnson, which is a legendary bicycle manufacturer from Fitchburg, Massachusetts, is actually better known historically as a producer of armaments. So, I don't think that's a mistake or a coincidence. So today we've got builders across the northeastern U.S. who are building some of the best bikes in the world for track racing, for road, for touring, mountain biking, cyclocross, randonneuring, and many of them are coming together for this show at the Boston Design Center on September 23rd.
Wow. Very nice. Well, it'll be fun. I went last year, and you were in a different location.
That's right. The first five shows were in Providence at four different locations in those 5 years, but all in the city of Providence. Last year, it was here in Connecticut. And what we've found is that we have outgrown the venues that we've been in. There's more demand from the exhibitors and the attendees to find a bigger space. And going to a bigger space in many places means going into a convention center.
Right.
And rule number one for the Builders Ball is no convention centers.
Yes. So. I like it. I like the theme. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
So I was looking on your website, and it appears that you have a much larger attendance of builders this year than you have had in the past. Or at least than you had last year, it looks like. I was really impressed by the number of people that are there. And, of course, you know, some of my old friends will be there. Richie Sachs will be there, and Peter Weigel will be there. They go back to my roots of custom frame building because they were working for Whitcomb USA many years ago. There's a lot of history of Connecticut small frame builders with those two guys.
And those two guys are also... in the New England context, our two internationally respected deans of bicycle
good word
building.
Yeah.
You know, bicycle geeks like you and I all around the world know who these two fellows are.
Sure.
And Peter Weigel, of course, is recently back from Paris, where he won an award at an international bicycle building competition.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, the Concours des Machines. The bike that he built that won an award at that show will be on display for the first time in the United States at the Builders Ball.
Well, now I have to go. I have to go to say hi to Peter anyway because, you know, we have a long history. But, so is it a randonneuring bike? Is it one of those?
Yes, it is a randonneuring bike, and it is... incredibly elegant and at the same and rugged yet lightweight.
Right.
And the testing that was done among the bikes in this competition included a lot of gravel and sort of cobbled anything but smooth roads.
Right.
And you know, not all the bikes survived all the way through.
Yeah.
So I think this is a wonderful niche of bicycle building, the randonneuring and gravel riding sort of segment,
right,
which has come to the forefront a bit in the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I know Peter's been fascinated with it for years, and it's funny because my very first J.P. Weigel bike that I got was far from a randonneuring bike. It was a flat out race bike, and it was very quick. And, you know, it had key features to it as far as, you know, its handling characteristics and all. And it was a great bike. It was a really nice bike.
It's a real honor to have Peter and Richard at the show. And one of the aspects of the show that attendees and exhibitors really like is that you've got these living legends of bikesmithery.
Yeah, bike smithery. Good.
At the show, but you've also got from all over the region, young builders, some of whom are, you know, just getting started and look up to these fellows, and they can have a booth right next to Peter Weigel or Richard Sachs. And you know, during setup and breakdown, they can talk about tubing and lugs and different different ways of going after a goal, and it's exciting for them. And for the attendees, the great variety of different builders that are there at the show makes for a much more diverse and interesting experience from the attendee perspective. So Peter and Richard, sure, but also some of the new, if I could say, vanguard of bike building in the U.S., fellas like Christopher Henry of 44 Bikes, mm-hmm. who builds some of the
countries. I talked to him last year.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you?
Yeah,
some of the country's best mountain bikes.
Yeah.
And he's doing that in New Hampshire one
right.
at a time.
Right.
Or Brian Chapman, who is becoming known around the world for his skills. And he's probably best known for his touring and rondineering type bicycles,
mm-hmm.
but he can do anything that he sets his mind to.
Right.
And, you know, alongside 34 other exhibitors at this show.
Right. I spoke to a number, well, there were a few guys there last year that were, they seemed to be from the Pioneer Valley in Massachusetts. That's kind of it's always been a hotbed of cycling because of the fact that, you know, you can ride your bike on the flat roads one day and then be up in the Berkshires the next day. So it's kind of got an interesting draw to it because of that.
Right. You can be, if you can find someone to build you a bike that is excellent on the rolling roads, smooth rolling roads of the Berkshires one day, but then the next day you're going up into the hills, and maybe that road that you're climbing turns into dirt.
Yeah.
And
my kind of road.
Yeah. And you've got a bike built just for you,
mm-hmm.
That can handle all of these different sorts of terrain. Then you've really hit on something.
Yeah. 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 And you know, it's people don't understand that there are certain characteristics that can be actually built into a bike frame, too, by changing tubing diameters and changing tubing types and, you know, changing the way the stays come into the bike. There's just so many pieces to that puzzle to make the bike work well for you. And when you get a custom bike, you'll often get the builder to look at your body weight. They'll look at the way you look on the bike. Like you take a look at me and I'm all legs and all arms and I have no upper body whatsoever. So I'm built kind of like a runner and I am an impossible fit on a bicycle unless I'm riding on a custom bike, and then I can get something that'll fit me just right. But I have to really fiddle around to get my bike to fit me correctly if I'm riding a stock bike. And the other factor that comes into it is I'm not a very big guy, so I'm very light. So I can get away with a very light bike because I'm not going to flex it very much because I'm just a little guy. And then you take someone like a friend of mine that I ride with, and he's, you know, I got a couple of guys that are over 200 pounds, and that's an entirely different bicycle, entirely different application of tubing. There's all sorts of cool stuff that goes into it. It's fascinating, really.
Yeah, and for people who don't fit so well on the off-the-shelf bikes that you find at your independent bicycle dealer, if you can't find something that fits you because your body geometry is a little bit out on the bell curve, then finding, if it's in your budget, because let's face it, these bikes can be pricey.
Oh, yeah, they sure can.
But if it's in your budget and riding a bicycle is part of your lifestyle, then going to a show like the Builder's Ball and talking with different constructors to find a good match personality-wise and someone who you respect their choices and who will respect you as well is a great place to start.
So there's other things, too. When I went last year, I ran into a small artist by the name of Doug Dale, who I have known forever because I bought my first hand-built bicycle frame from him. So very interesting. He owned the Peloton in Amherst, Massachusetts at that time. And Doug is a very interesting guy. He's raced all over the world. He's a very interesting guy. But now he's taken his passion of art to and bicycles, and he put it together, and he makes this really interesting stuff. I actually brought home a nice a nice framed picture for Fran for the because it just reminded me of her. She's he has a piece where it's a woman riding on a bicycle with the long hair coming out the back of the helmet, and there's an interesting design on the shorts. And then the design on the shorts, if you look at it really, really close, is New York City. That's where Fran was born. So I just looked at it and said, that's mine. I got to bring that home. That's totally mine. So anyway, he does some really cool stuff, very different. I looked on your list, and it looked like the folks from Boca Box are there also.
Right. So it's I'm glad you mentioned Doug and Buka Boot.
Buka Boot, that was it, Buka Boot. Right.
So it's not strictly frame builders.
Right.
There are also people and companies who are making, in the United States, bicycle accessories and components and garments. So we've got a couple of custom bag makers, one based in Massachusetts, one based in Vermont, that will be at the show. Cleverhood, which makes bicycle-specific rainwear in Fall River, Massachusetts, will be at the show for, I think, the fifth or possibly the sixth time. And I'm really excited to have them back.
I missed that one. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. Rain capes, really wonderful.
Yeah.
And Sine Wave, which is a company that makes electronics to convert power from your generator hub into something that you can plug a USB device into.
Oh, nice.
So you can be riding along and keeping your Garmin or your iPhone or whatever charged so you don't lose out on any Strava points.
That's a not that we should need to, right. But anyway, actually that's really good for a brevet rider also, because the brevet riders are riding all night, and
right.
So they're going to be discharging batteries on lights, or they're going to need a generator of sorts to generate the light.
And now that it's so easy to buy lights that are USB rechargeable,
right?
You don't have to worry about, am I going to run out of battery with this AAA that I had to stick in this thing?
Right.
You recharge it at home, or you recharge it while you're riding on your bike if you've got a dynamo hub.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It's terrific. And he, you know, these are electronic gadget fabricated in Massachusetts, designed in Massachusetts.
All right.
And you'll be able to see it at a show in Massachusetts.
So, which makes sense. So, is he actually manufacturing the dynamo hub, or is he manufacturing what the dynamo goes into?
That's exactly right. So, it's a little gadget. There's actually two different models that mount onto your stem that you can plug in your lights or your Garmin or your phone to.
Right. Yeah. For those of you who are listening who don't know what a dynamo hub is, it's a very interesting, usually it's the front hub on the bike, and it is...
shout out to Frank Zappa.
Dynamo hub, yeah, right. Yeah. And it's a mini generator. It's actually part of the wheel, and it generates electricity, and that's kind of a cool thing. So it's something else you can do with a bicycle, of course. But they were popular many, many years ago. They were a pretty popular thing, and then they kind of came back. I remember the original ones had a lot of resistance.
Yeah, so when you're walking around and you see an old classic English bike, a Raleigh or a Rudge or one of these, you know, not the high-end English bikes, but the kind that you are more likely to see on the street, and look at that front wheel hub, if it's thicker than you're expecting it to be, then it's probably got a dynamo inside it.
Right.
And, you know, more resistance to be sure, but being able to run your lights at night is great. And while those hubs back then did create a bit more resistance, still more efficient than what people call a bottle generator, which is the little gadget that attaches to your fork blade and you flip down onto the rim of your bicycle wheel.
Right.
So you can turn it on at night, and then when you're riding around during the day, it's not rubbing and not creating that resistance.
And those created a lot of resistance.
Oh, did they ever. And still do. I have several
Do you still
bikes.
Have them?
I have several antique bikes that have, you know, dating back to the 30s, that have so-called bottle generators.
Yeah.
Boy, you really feel yourself pedaling.
Oh, I had one when I was a kid, and it was you definitely know that you're working a lot harder when you've got one of those things rubbing against your wheel. Yeah, that's pretty cool. But the new ones are better. I've experienced that. There's a few shops that kind of specialize in this, and they'll build a wheel around one for you, and you can you can have one of these. And when you spin them in the in the stand in the stores, they really spin a lot easier than they used to.
Yeah, it's the equivalent. I read something before buying my most recent generator hub, and it said something like, it's the equivalent of a 1 foot climb for 1,000 feet on a flat.
Oh, that's nothing.
And so you're not feeling a whole lot.
Yeah.
So the technology has gotten a lot better.
Oh,
over the
a whole
decades.
Lot better. Yeah. So you actually have a few of these.
Yeah. Well, I've got a bunch of bikes, and I like vintage and antique bicycles.
Yeah.
And, a lot of them happen to have either rim generators or hub generators.
Sure.
And it's nice to go out for a ride at night to meet a friend at a bar or something,
mm-hmm.
and know that I'm going to have lights on the way home.
Right. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah, the old Raleighs had a little clip that went right into the headset area, and it held an E-light. Do you know what an E-light is?
I do not know what an E-light is.
Oh, yeah. If you take a look at some of the old Raleigh bicycles, you'll see, or any of the English bicycles, you'll see this kind of, it's a bracket that comes out and goes up, and it has like a little, usually has a nice little cutout pattern in it or whatever. That's an E-light bracket.
Yeah, I never heard that term before, but now that you mention it, yes, I do have several bikes that have those brackets.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah. Well, there was a light that actually snapped into that bracket. It would slide down and snap into that bracket, and you could get them two different ways. You could get them so they held a couple of D-cells, so you could have a battery-powered one, which, they didn't last at all. And then you could get one that was hook up to a generator, like a dynamo hub, and that's how far back I go. I'm dating myself.
Well, and if you still have one of those, you can actually get a little LED that will fit inside that housing.
Oh, nice.
So
yeah.
It'll make it'll be a much more efficient way
takes
to carry.
Takes a lot less power.
Get a
yeah.
lot more light out of the power that you put into it.
Wow. Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Have you done that?
I have not.
Okay. I it sounded like you've been down that road.
I've thought about it.
It's a great idea. It's totally a great idea. Yeah, because those other ones were just not very efficient, but they were fun, but they weren't very efficient. When I first got my first job in a bicycle shop, I was working in, it was in 1975, and there were still a large number of Raleigh sports three speeds and different, all the different, the Triumphs and the Raleighs and the, oh God, there were all these different brands, mm-hmm. but they
most
were.
Most of them were actually owned by Raleigh.
Yeah, most of them were. They were the B level companies of Raleigh, right? Exactly. And but they were pretty heavy around here. And I know on the UConn campus there was an experiment many, many years ago where they had what they called the blue bikes, and they were all these blue Raleigh three speeds. And the blue bikes were, available to anybody who wanted to ride a bike across campus. So it was like a ride share kind of thing. You just ride the bike, put it back in a rack, go in and do what you want to do. And, of course, what happens when you do that amongst a bunch of college students. The bikes quickly disappeared.
I'm guessing that there are several of them down in the Willimantic River.
Yeah, or on the bottom of Mirror Lake here. I'm sure that there probably are a number of them that are submerged.
Modern bike share systems with bicycles with location trackers built in and stuff has had a really positive effect on the reestablishment of bike share on college campuses, but in cities across the country as well and around the world.
Yeah, I'm amazed by it, and a number of them are now e-bikes too, so you can have alternative power or a little bit of help when you need a little bit of help. And you just don't want to go to a nice friendly city like New York with them because they don't like e-bikes in New York. But
well, I think they like them. And if it's I find that there's less resistance to pedal assist e-bikes. It's the throttle
Oh, right.
Based e-bikes.
Exactly. Exactly.
And let's face it, between you and me and your audience, a throttle-based e-bike is a moped.
Yes,
it's a moped.
It is.
And I don't, my personal feeling about that is mopeds don't belong on bicycle facilities.
Right.
But if you've got a pedal assist where you're working.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
It's giving you that boost because you live in a particularly hilly place or you're getting on in years or you've had your knee replaced, whatever the reason might be. And frankly, you don't even need a reason if you don't want. As long as you're doing the work,
right.
I'm very happy to share bicycle space with you.
Oh, absolutely.
But if all you're doing is getting on and opening the throttle and heading off at 25 or 30 miles an hour.
You should be on a scooter or a motorcycle.
That's a moped.
Yeah.
It's a moped that happens to have pedals on it.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you for sure. So we covered a couple of these questions here already, but how did you start the show?
Oh, that's a good question. As with so many things, it started with me complaining. and I was complaining to my friend Richard, Richard Fries, who you know.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I was complaining about how the North American Handbuilt Bike Show never comes to New England. And this is back in 2010 or 2011. And I think he just got tired of hearing me moan about it. And he said, Eric, don't complain. Do something about it.
There you go.
You got to establish a bike show for New England. And here we are, 7 years later, and about to have the 7th annual edition. And it's really part of the bike culture landscape now.
Right.
So I want to thank Richard Fries, who, he calls races around the world, primarily cyclocross, but also road, as well as being the executive director of the Massachusetts Bicycle Coalition. I want to thank Richard for being less tolerant of me sitting around complaining than other people might have been.
It's a good thing. We need to thank Richard Fries for being Richard Fries. Richard is... he is definitely one of the chief ambassadors of cycling in the U.S. I just think Richard has done a lot for cycling. He's done a lot for awareness. Now, as you mentioned, he's with the Massachusetts Bicycle. What do they call them?
Coalition? Mass Bike for short.
Mass Bike. Oh, Coalition Mass Bike. Okay. And he's I have to pin him down at some point, too. I'd love to get him on the air with me because I think he'd we could have a good time. We probably would get off track a lot, but that's okay.
It's hard to have only an hour to talk with Richard Fries.
It's hard to have only an hour to talk with Peter Weigel. Then there's another one. I mean, there are a number of us out there that have just been at this for so long, and our levels of enthusiasm are very high that, you very quickly eat up an hour's worth of time. So that we don't do that here, let's let me just keep moving on here. And so the show started with a complaint. That's good. That's good. I like that.
It's a fair way to describe it.
Okay, that's good. And of course, I think we kind of touched on this. What makes a show different than other bike shows?
Mm-hmm.
But because it's not really a trade show, but it's kind of a trade show.
Yeah, I mean, technically, it's a trade show. When I apply for the one-day beer and wine license for the show, and there's a bunch of check boxes. What is this event? It is a trade show. That
right.
is what it is
right.
When you drill down. But what makes it different, again, is the mood, the feeling of the show.
Right.
It doesn't feel like you've walked into a high-stress sales environment like so many trade shows are.
No,
it feels
it's
like you've
really
walked
late.
Into an art gallery opening.
Yeah, it does. It does. It has that exact feeling, which is really nice. And we had for the Cross Nationals in Hartford back in January, we had an actual art showing at the Cross Nationals. It was all bicycle based, and that was kind of a cool thing. But it had that same kind of feeling, there was beer and wine and just people just hanging out and looking at pretty things and
very nice.
Just really enjoying it. So it is a very cool atmosphere, I will say. Do you have sponsors on this?
Yes, we have three principal sponsors. Thank you for asking. And I'm really proud of the relationships with all three of them. And they're very pertinent to this sort of show as well. And our beer sponsor this year is Harpoon Brewery. And in this part of the country, there's no brewery that shows more love to bicycling and bicyclists than Harpoon.
they have a ride that goes from brewery to brewery.
That's
or
right.
The, so from Boston out to Windsor, Vermont. Yeah.
That's right. And yeah. So that's a wonderful connection. And Shimano is back for third, maybe the fourth year as a sponsor.
Okay.
And that's terrific. They show a lot of support for this show and for bicycling in general. But our number one sponsor this year, our gold sponsor, is something that I'm particularly pleased about. It's Copenhagen Wheel. The company is called Super Pedestrian. Their number one product is the Copenhagen Wheel. And this goes back to something we were chatting about 5 minutes ago, the e-bikes, pedal assist versus throttle beast. And the Copenhagen Wheel is a pedal assist e-wheel. And you can buy just the wheel from them or an entire bike. If you buy just a wheel, you can swap it from one bike to another. And it's the most technologically advanced piece of pedal assist, electric assist bicycle technology out there. The company is based in Cambridge, Mass.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the parts are manufactured in the U.S. The whole thing is assembled at a facility in Massachusetts. And basically what you've got is this remarkable wheel on your bicycle that you can control how much of an assist it gives you via Bluetooth from an app on your phone. So you can have your phone in your pocket or mounted to your handlebar and or stem and tell it, you know what, I'm kind of beat today. I need more of an assist. And just, you know, beep, boop, beep on the app. And
yeah.
It gives you, as you're pedaling, more of a boost. Or if you're feeling really strong, and you can turn it off entirely from your phone. It also has regenerative braking. So as you brake, it captures that electricity and recharges itself.
Amazing.
So when you're going down a steep hill, a lot of that power, which is energy, which is just lost as heat between your rim and your brake pad.
Right.
And disappears out into the atmosphere. That energy is captured and put back into the batteries of the Copenhagen wheel. So next time you get to another hill, which will be shortly thereafter probably, you've got a little bit more power to play with. It's a wonderful piece of technology. And
it,
really
is a, it is a product of MIT, is it not? Or there were some people from MIT that did this, which
yes,
is also Boston-based.
That's right. So
right?
Their offices and their R&D facility is in Cambridgeport, less than a mile as a crow flies from MIT, where the founders got their degrees
and
came up with this idea. And you can go to their place there in Cambridgeport, in Cambridge, Mass., and take it for a spin around the neighborhood, try it out. Or if somebody happened to go to the Builder's Ball, they could sign a waiver and hand over, I don't know, their driver's license.
Yeah, whatever you would do, right.
So that they know you're not going to run off with this expensive piece of equipment.
Sure.
And ride it around the Seaport District for a little while.
Wow.
Around the building where the Builder's Ball is this year. I mentioned it's at the Boston Design Center. The Boston Design Center is the primary tenant of this wonderful building, which has been branded as the Innovation and Design Building.
Hmm.
This is one of the largest buildings in all of New England. It is fully a third of a mile long.
Wow.
It's enormous. And it was an assembly facility for either the U.S. Navy or the Army, built in 1920. At the time, what we now call the Seaport District was then known as the South Boston Army Base.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is enormous building, a third of a mile long, all concrete and steel, super heavy duty.
Yeah.
Right.
Seven, maybe eight stories high,
wow.
With wonderful views and the Black Falcon cruise ship terminal.
Yeah,
pulls up right behind it, and there's functional dry dock facilities right on the other side of the building, so you can stand up there.
Amazing.
Check it out.
Oh my God!
And then you're looking across the harbor at Logan Airport.
Yeah.
And then you look through the other windows and you can see the sunset behind downtown Boston.
Yeah.
It's just an incredible building.
It's on the South Shore, right? It's on the south side of Boston?
Right. So technically it's technically the neighborhood is South Boston, but mm-hmm. the neighborhood has been branded as the Seaport District. So if you're familiar, if your listeners are familiar with where the World Trade Center Boston is and the Harpoon Brewery is, or the Black Falcon cruise ship terminal, that's the part of Boston we're talking about.
Tony Shirolas totally wants to say hi.
Oh, okay. Tony, are you there?
I heard Ron and Eric were talking bikes, and I had to dial in.
Oh, okay, good.
Always happy to talk with you, Tony.
So you know Tony.
Oh, Tony and I go back a ways.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how we first met.
I'm guessing it was East Coast Greenway.
It probably was. So I'm just recently off 18 years as staff to building the East Coast Greenway. I was the director of Greenway Development, and Tony was one of our heroes in bike advocacy that we would work with. And if there was ever anything going on in Hartford, or there was an opportunity to do something in Hartford with a local partner, the first person I would ever call or send an email to would always be Tony.
How about that? Well, Tony, how about that? You're famous.
I'm occasionally famous on very specific topics.
Okay, very good. Very good. So, are you going to go to the Builders Ball?
I don't think I'll be able to make it up to the Builders Ball, but I'm stoked about the cyclocross races coming up. And then I saw you guys were also talking about bikes on campus, and that's got me really excited here in Hartford for a lot of reasons.
Right. Well, there's so many possibilities for Hartford, and I think Hartford is starting to move in the right direction. I think it has a long way to go, as does a lot of the state of Connecticut. But it obviously is a great way to get around. Yeah, and we're very excited to be, I am very excited to be hosting the cyclocross race this weekend in Hartford on Saturday. Little plug. We'll talk about that in a bit. But anyway, cycling in Hartford is it's a thing, and there's a lot of growth there right now. So it's fun to see. And now we have the Charter Oak Trail. They're working on the Charter Oak Trail right now and connecting it to the Hop River Trail.
Terrific.
And
yeah, it's a
and
short
it's,
connection to be made, and there's a crossing of U.S. Route 44 that is critical to making that connection. It's really exciting to see this move forward. There are people that have been working on this for 20 years.
Oh, I know.
To see this, one of the last links, one of the last critical links for connecting to Eastern Connecticut's trail network coming together, it's really exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Once it connects with the Hop River Trail, that'll bring you down to Willimantic. And now the Willimantic is working on its cross-city piece, which then connects you to the Airline Trail, which is
right.
some 20 miles long.
Right.
It's really terrific.
Well, the Airline Trail, the bridge that crosses over the Willimantic River was instated last year. So now we have a bridge that now connects the Airline Trail that goes out to East Hampton to the Airline Trail that goes up to Pomfret Center, so Pomfret Station. So that actually is completed, but there is the issue of the Main Street part of the trail, which I have been battling back and forth with the town about. You really need to put this on Main Street because the commerce that it'll bring to the town is they have no idea what they have. They have a gift looking them in the face, and they're not seeing it.
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum where I think you and Tony, if he's still on the phone, will agree.
Yeah, he's there.
where on the one hand, you're connecting two trails where mm-hmm. motor vehicles are not allowed.
Correct.
And, so you've got these family-friendly facilities, and you want to be able to connect them for people who aren't comfortable riding on the streets.
Right.
At the same time, for riders like us, if we're on a long distance ride, spending all day out,
mm-hmm.
Willimantic is the place where we're going to stop for lunch.
Oh,
and
sure.
So you and I are not going to use a future off-road piece to get through Willimantic. We're going to hop on Main Street, and we're going to go right to the brew pub.
Oh yeah.
And have lunch and a beer. possibly two, depending on how much more riding there is to
right,
do.
Right, right. And there's so many more possibilities now from before. Now you could also go to the coffee shop, and there's now a coffee shop there. The original one, Cafe Mantic, actually turned more into a restaurant than a coffee shop. But there's now a new coffee shop there. There's a juice shop there. There's all sorts of places. I mean, it's starting to build, and all they need to do is expose it more to the cycling community. Because, and I've had this speech a number of times with them, with the town planner and all, and it said, look, if you build it, they will come. There's an old story to that.
Yeah, I totally agree. If you build it, they will come. If you put signs that let people know, you know, how to get to it, they will come. And if it's fully connected, they will come. You know, those are the things we really need to focus on. Did you guys already shout out the ribbon cutting for the connections in East Hartford this afternoon?
No, I did not. Why don't you tell us about that? Because that's completely slipped by my radar. What you got?
We just paved two great little sections in East Hartford, and I think it's a continuation of that Charter Oak Greenway coming into Hartford's Riverfront Trail System. They still have one little gap in the East Coast Greenway through East Hartford, which is kind of associated with the Pratt & Whitney property.
I've heard about that. Yep.
But it goes all the way up to Main and Willow Street now. So if somebody, you know, works at Pratt & Whitney, they can take the trail from either direction, either from the east or from the west, and get to work. And the they have a ribbon cutting at 6 p.m., I think, in Great River Park in East Hartford. And they'll have some folks out there celebrating that, and it's a good opportunity to show up and ask about that gap.
Wow, that's really nice. I might have to check that out because I'm going to be out in Rocky Hill this evening for a cyclocross race. So I'll stop and check that out. That's cool. Thank you.
No, you won't.
No, I won't.
No.
No, we have something we're doing tonight.
No, we don't. No. The cyclocross race has been canceled for tonight.
Oh.
Oh, bummer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why? Because of rain?
I think so.
Because they canceled a cyclocross race because of rain?
Yeah.
I'm missing the point.
Let me just double check that.
Completely missing the point.
But I'm on Facebook, and I'm pretty sure I saw that.
So maybe not. Maybe not.
While you're double checking, I want to shout out a couple other really neat things related to Hartford and the UConn campus.
Yes.
On September 12th, we've got a happy hour at the Spectra Wired Cafe, and we're going to be talking about a pilot bike share program in Hartford and bringing car share to Hartford, both good things for car light and campus and downtown living. And then on the 27th, there's this neat new CT Transit connection between Hartford and UConn stores that I'm really excited about. And our Transport Hartford program is having a workshop and panel discussion with dinner at Hartford Public Library downtown to talk about that and get folks more information.
That's great. Hey, Tony, you're going to have to email me that
so I can
keep that broadcasting, because that's good stuff. It's really good stuff. So let's see what have we missed on here.
So
you know what we haven't covered, and I don't want to lose this before we lose time here. I need to know date, time, and location of the Builders Ball.
I'm so glad you asked. Yeah, so this is our seventh annual show. The location is the Boston Design Center. The date is Saturday, September 23rd, from 2 to 10 p.m. And I really encourage people to go to our website, which is newenglandbuildersball.com. All sorts of information in there, including links for all of the exhibitors this year and some really stellar photography. Go to the Instagram as well. Our Instagram handle is @buildersball. And that's just chock full of amazing photos of beautiful bicycles from around the world.
Beautiful. Very nice. Very nice. And again, when you go there, you're going to see a list of exhibitors, which is far and beyond what you've had before.
It's really a who's who of Northeastern United States bicycle fabricators. We've got five frame builders from Brooklyn alone coming to the show.
Brooklyn, New York.
From Brooklyn, New York.
How about that?
Not Brooklyn, Connecticut, not Brookline, Massachusetts.
Brooklyn,
New York City. Five builders from there alone. We've got people coming from Cape May, New Jersey, and Philadelphia. We've got exhibitors from Maryland, and even one coming from Ohio.
Really?
But again, mostly mostly the Northeast and New England.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. It's going to be a spectacular show.
I'm really excited.
Yeah. Well, that's great. You know, we will keep this up live on our Facebook page at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. So you can check that out there. So if you need to know more, that's another way of doing it. If you have any questions about it whatsoever, you can obviously contact either one of us and we can point you in the right direction. But
I can be
this is
through our Facebook or through our website or through our Instagram.
Great, great. Well, this is really exciting. I think you have reached the next level here with this by the looks of things.
Oh,
and
thank you.
It's really cool to have had you on here today. And Tony, thank you so much for calling in and giving us some input here. We're always happy to hear from you. And I don't think we laughed you off your seat in your cube here today, but that's okay. We've had some reactions when Fran and I were doing a survey. And
that's
apparently,
Tony. This is Tony Shirolis. You're thinking of Tony Bazzini.
You're right. You're right. I'm totally confused. I'm sorry. I know too many Tonys. Anyway, doesn't matter. Anyway, we will be talking more, and we'll put our information out on our prospective Facebook pages and get you a whole bunch of people to show up. It'll be fun.
The more
and,
the merrier.
And unfortunately, the CCAP Rocky Hill Cyclocross Series is canceled for tonight.
Well, that's just unfortunate. That's
bummer.
Very unfortunate. Bummer. Well, let me guide you to a little bit more here just so we can get everybody excited. That's unfortunate because I had it here under upcoming events, and it is getting very close for me to time for us to
wrap it
sign
up.
Out. So
it's supposed to be really bad tonight. Like
yeah.
worse than just, you know, like a bunch of rain.
So what's really bad? You're riding a cross bike. You're off road. You're gonna get a little muddy. It's good. Anyway, you know that's me. So we will pass on the CCAP Rocky Hill Cyclocross Series this evening in Rocky Hill, and we will move on to this Saturday. I am the race director, and I along with Dave from Newington Bicycle Shop, we put on the Hartford Riverfront Cyclocross Race Saturday, September 9th in Riverfront Park in Hartford. So come check it out. Bring your favorite cowbell. If you don't have a cowbell, go find a cowbell. Cowbells are very important and highly
encouraged. More cowbell.
More cowbell. Highly encouraged. So anyway, we're expecting a pretty good turnout by the looks of things. I've got race entries coming in right and left here. If you want to know a little bit more about it, you can visit the Facebook page and you'll find a link there. Or you can also go to bikereg.com and you can sign up. Even if you have never done it before, you can buy a license for one day and go. Have a good time. We will be using a lot of our Nationals course from this past January. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And I think, Tony, are you still on? Are you still
yes,
on?
Yes, I am.
Isn't there
here.
Some sort of gathering on Saturday night at BCCO?
I believe we're doing a bit of a cookout after party for the cross race at BCCO on Park Street on Saturday.
If my eyes are still open and I've got the wherewithal to do it, I will see you.
Yeah, we hope to see a bunch of folks out.
Yeah.
The muddier, the better.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. We also have on September 16th, we have the new Ashford Metric Gravel Grinder coming up on September 16th. A shout out. Our next week, our guest will be Jill Nugent from Nerac Earth Cycling Club, who will talk a little bit more about that. The KMC Crossfest is September 28th through October 1st. The Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross, another race that I am affiliated with, put on by the Friends of Mansfield Hollow State Park, is Saturday, October 7th. And it's just cyclocross craze right now here. Gloucester Grand Prix of Cross, October 14th and 15th. So there's a whole bunch of cyclocross going on. You are in New England. This is where it all happens. And we are ready to move on here. My name is Pedlin' Ron. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Thanks for calling, Tony.
Thanks.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can send me an email at bicycletalk@1@gmail.com. And you can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org or on iTunes. If you'd like to contribute or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk@gmail.com. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.
5, 6, 7.
You're listening to WHUS Storrs.
Not quite my tempo. It's all good. No worries. Here we go.
You're listening to WHUS Storrs.
You're rushing. Here we go.
You're listening to WHUS Storrs.
Dragging just a hair.
You're listening to...
Wait for my cue.
Okay, sorry.
Why do you suppose I just hurled a chair at your head, Neiman?
I'm not Neiman.
Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know. It all sounds the same to me. I'll give it one more shot. You're listening to WHUS Storrs. Yukon Sound Alternative.